Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.
Hello, Anton. How are you this Sunday afternoon?
I'm above ground, Dave, so let's take that.
Right. OK, I'll take that. Now, what stories have you got for us this week?
Well, as always, I like to give you a bit of a spectrum to choose from. So we can start with hydrogen isotopes or flatulence, whichever you like.
Oh, God, is that the same as last week? You had flatulence.
It is
for ages
not. We didn't
week.
Have hydrogen isotopes last week.
No, OK, well, tell me about hydrogen isotopes.
Well, Japan has had to scrap its little Mr. Tritium cartoon representation of tritium, which is a hydrogenized isotope.
Sorry, hold on. What's a hydrogenized isotope when it's at home?
It's not hydrogen. It is an isotope of hydrogen. Tritium is a substance which doesn't exist much. Like, you can't go mining for tritium. I think it may exist a little bit in the upper atmosphere, but the one place that you find quite a lot of tritium is in a nuclear reactor. And if you will remember, Japan had something of a minor difficulty with several of its nuclear reactors in a place called Fukushima about 10 or 15 years ago. Right. So when you've got problems with your nuclear reactor, you have to do something. You either do Three Mile Island and bury it under concrete, you do Chernobyl and you put it in a big giant cask, or you wash the Hur as they did in Fukushima. So there is an awful lot of wastewater in Fukushima. Specifically, there is a million tons. Not a million litres, a million tons of wastewater in Fukushima, and they have to figure out what to do with it. So they came up with what has to be the most environmentally friendly approach, which is...
to spread it all out over the seas.
Exactly.
Really?
Dump the ocean. Yeah.
Well, I've wanted to use this word for ages since I saw it on Primetime a few weeks ago. It's fantastic. I said, did she really say that? How efficacious is this?
Oh, well, it's very efficacious in the sense that it definitely gets rid of the tritium in the same way as flinging poo out your bathroom window.
No, hold on. What I mean is, how efficacious was the cleaning? Like, is it 100%?
Fukushima?
No, if you clean the water or whatever it's supposed to do, or purify it or whatever.
Indeed.
Does it do it by 100%?
No.
Ah, well then, for God's sake, they shouldn't be doing that.
Well, nothing is ever 100%, Dave. Well, there's risk all about us. Look at trampolines.
Yeah, it always kills 99% of household germs.
Exactly. And it's the one that gets you. Botulism. That's the one you got to watch. Anyway. Obviously, the Japanese public were sceptical about the notion of dumping a million tons of tritium-infested water into the oceans because of things like the fish and the radioactivity. To give you a sense of how radioactive, by the way, tritium is, it's supposed to be not the bad kind of radioactive. It's the sort of okay kind of radioactive. So your phone, or rather your watch, if it has little things that glow at night, that's often tritium that gives that little radioactive glow, so you can read your watch if you still have one at night. However, the Japanese were concerned about the notion of dumping a million tons of tritium.
Are they concerned about the notion of dumping it, or are they concerned about the little childish thing that you mentioned is going to be the symbol of it, so we'll all feel good?
Well, that's there's layers to this like an onion, Dave. Because of the concern that they had and were likely to have on a greater scale about the notion of dumping this water, the Japanese government thought, you know what we need here, lads? We need a campaign to convince people it's okay. So they came up with, and I'm not making this up, a hydrogen isotope cartoon character called Little Mr. Tritium. And Little Mr. Tritium did a little dance as he went off to be radioactive in the sea. And the response was, to quote a local writer, if the government thinks it can get the general public to understand this just by creating a cute character, it is making a mockery of risk communication. So Little Mr. Tritium has been spiked.
Okay, if he's been spiked, is the action still going ahead?
They're pausing the action while they have a bit of a think. It's like in Father Ted where they're saying another mass. The difficulty is they have a million tons of this water and there's not a lot else you can do with it. So the general view is it's heading for the sea at some point. It's just a matter of time.
I see. Anyway, where are we going with this? Fukushima?
Flatulence, Dave. Well, we can park. Do you want to talk about a big rabbit?
No, you had flatulence last week with the farting pastor of Limpopo. What was his name again? Christ Penelope.
His name is Roland the Farter, otherwise known as Rulandus le Farter. You will remember he was a man who had to give, in Latin, una saltum et sifflitum et unum bumbulum. One jump, one whistle and one fart for the king's court at Christmas.
I'm not going to doubt any of that. Okay,
the reason this is relevant to Roland the Farter is because an Austrian court has just found that farting is not a form of protected self-expression.
And he's trying to claim that this is self... sorry, what?
No, Roland's dead. Roland keeled over in the 12th century.
Oh, right.
History does not record
some bloke how. Then is in court for farting at somebody and he's saying it's a form of self-expression.
Precisely.
That's his
defense. To add some detail and colour, he was in court for thrusting flatulence in the direction of an officer of the law.
Do you know your Shakespeare? There is, I don't know which one it is, but there's definitely a Shakespearean play. There's one whole line, one of the characters says, "I fart at thee." There is, I swear there really is.
Are you sure you're not mixing this up with Monty Python?
No, I'm definitely sure I'm not mixing
this
it up.
This has happened to you before, Dave.
I'm telling you, honestly, I don't know what it is. I don't know
Shakespeare
which play it is.
Is full of grot, and they don't tell you that in school.
Right, no.
What do you think?
They
I think Hamlet meant
that.
When he put his head in his lap and asked Ophelia if he was about country matters. It had nothing to do with farms, Dave.
Okay.
Anyway.
Okay, go on.
This man appeared in court in Austria and he was facing a fine of 500 euros for farting on a police officer. He argued in court that his fart fell under freedom of expression. He actually argued what I would have thought was a contradictory duality, because his first argument was that his fart was involuntary. But if it wasn't, then it was free expression. So the court found against him. On both counts, they found that he had been flatulent through his own office and that it didn't reach the bar for communicative content. But even if it did reach the bar for communicative content, it would be a form of expression that transcends the boundaries of decency. But the judge knocked his fine back from 500 euro to 100.
And does it rest there? Is that the end of it?
That is the end of it, yes. It has come to a conclusion. But what is important is that it does set a precedent. The brogatory, which we discussed last week, Roland the Farter, their legacy is in tatters in Austria, because what to them was a profitable art form is now no longer considered a form of expression.
Well, they should talk to Christ Penelope. Do you remember him from a few weeks ago? The farting pastor of Limpopo, no?
Oh, he was curing people of their spiritual blockages with his flatulence. I had totally forgotten about him.
Anyway.
Big rabbit news.
Yeah, rabbit news. Okay.
No, big rabbit news.
Oh, big rabbit news, yeah.
The rabbit being big as opposed to the news.
All right.
The world's biggest rabbit has been stolen from Worcestershire.
The world's biggest rabbit has been stolen from Worcestershire. Okay. And who? That's a terrible, sad story. Why would somebody steal a big rabbit? And how old is the rabbit? Is he? I mean, she? Whatever. I don't know.
I don't have all of the details, but I can answer. We can infer some of the answers to your questions from the data that I do have.
Great.
First of all, the rabbit is 129 centimetres long, which in old money is slightly over 4 feet.
That sounds very long. Wow, for a rabbit.
Yeah, I mean, for a Great Dane, it'd be wee. For a rabbit, very large. You're talking Cocker Spaniel size.
Wow. Okay.
Which is a big rabbit, Dave.
That's a big rabbit, definitely. Yeah.
As to the age of the rabbit, I don't know how old he is. His name is Darius, by the way. But in the appeal for his return, his owner said that could he please be brought back because he is too old to breed now.
Right, indeed. He just should be brought back anyway. That's disgraceful.
It is, it's bad. But it goes to why he was stolen. I had assumed one, if you stole a big rabbit, it was either to keep it as a pet or to eat it. But
to breed big rabbits.
Obviously, there's a market for big rabbits.
Wow, that's a terrible thing. I have a Chuck Norris joke. Chuck Norris is the only man who can pull a hat out of a rabbit. Okay, moving swiftly on.
Oh, no, I think that may be your best. Let's dwell on it for a moment. Mystery B.
Mystery B.
Let me try that again with my own teeth. Mystery Beast in tree. Turns out to be croissant.
Oh, I saw that. I saw a picture of it anyway. It was a croissant in a tree, basically. And people were freaking out.
Precisely.
Yeah, that was a bit silly. I can't remember what country it was in. What country was it in?
Poland. Surprised me.
Poland. Oh, okay.
I don't know why it surprised me, but Poland didn't seem to be Poland always strikes me as sensible.
Okay.
You know, if you'd read about this story and it had turned out to be in Louisiana, you would have said, yeah. Poland, though, I was slightly surprised.
And people were freaking out because it was in a tree and they thought it was an animal, even though it didn't move, obviously, for a few days, and thought, like, if you went near to it, it would, so like a spider can stay there for like 4 days and suddenly he runs a billion miles an hour when you touch it. That kind of thing.
Exactly. They're the really scary ones. It's the ones that sit quite... Do you know how to tell if an animal is a threat?
It's charging at you.
That's one way. If it's carrying a Smith & Wesson. No. Eyeball positioning, Dave.
Yours or theirs?
Well, if it's a gorilla, yours, because we've talked about this before, you must never look directly at a gorilla.
That. Yeah.
But the eyeball positioning as a general rule, if you are talking about non-insect life, usually if the eyeballs are to the front of the face, the animal is designed to eat things, like to predate.
not many of their eyeballs are behind their head.
No, they are. A lot of animals have eyeballs on the sides of their heads.
Right, yeah, okay.
Think of birds.
Right, okay.
Deer, for instance.
Oh, nice.
Scary runaway animals have eyeballs on the sides of their heads. Each animals have eyeballs in the front of their heads.
I see, okay.
Croissants, no eyeballs.
Next time I confront a bear, okay.
Exactly. Bears, eyeballs, front of the head, yeah. Run away.
Right.
So apparently this croissant had been reported repeatedly to police officers in Krakow. And the reports say people aren't opening their windows because they're afraid it will go into their house. Remember, we're talking about a croissant. Krakow Animal Welfare was called and said that the incident was genuine, but that somebody had clearly lobbed a pastry into a tree to feed birds who have their eyeballs on the sides of their heads again.
Right, indeed. Okay.
Do you know about the flounder?
The flounder? No.
Migrating eyeballs.
Sorry?
When a flounder is born, it has eyeballs on either side of its head. And as it goes through adolescence, one of its eyeballs moves to the other side of its head, allowing it to lie flat on the ground.
Hold on, what's a flounder?
It's a fish.
A fish, okay, right.
It's a genre of fish. It is a genus.
I'm still up the tree with
oh, the we've thing. Done with that. The croissant turned out to be
off to get the croissant. In fact, just a croissant. Does none of those birds go to get the croissant and eat it? No.
That's a fine question. Yeah, I don't know why the birds. Maybe the birds thought it was a vicious predator that was going to eat them, so they didn't go near it.
Oh, flounder, right? Okay, that is a fish. Okay, fine. So tell me about the flounder. What's so special about it compared to a salmon, say?
Well, flounders are a flat fish. They're like a plaice or like a sole, and they live on the bottom of the sea. I think maybe plaice and sole might be different species of flounder. They're white on the bottom, brown or grey on top. Why? So that when you look at them from on top, they're the same colour as the sand. But if they're swimming above you and you look up, they're the same colour as the sky. It helps them not be eaten by other fish. But the interesting thing about them is they are born with their eyeballs on either side of their head, because they swim vertically. And at a certain point, they find themselves, I don't know, they go on a gap year, and they decide they now want to live as flounders should, lying on their sides on the bottom of the sea. To do that, they would be burying their left eye underground if they did it, which would be impractical. So the eye moves to the other side of their head.
Have you seen my octopus teacher yet?
Yes, I hated it with a huge passion.
Did you? It won the BAFTA last week. It's the best documentary of the year. I'll be talking to the person next week on the programme all about his friendship with, or one of them anyway, on the camera.
Oh, good. It's a heartwarming story, and tell him I enjoyed every minute.
Okay, flounders. Where are we going next?
Yeah. I know I've talked a lot about fish so far.
Right.
But there is actually fish news this week.
Oh, good. Fish news. What is it?
The world's first fish doorbell has been installed in Utrecht.
In what, like in a fish tank or in a place or, sorry, where? Like obviously underwater.
Correct. The doorbell itself, I don't think is underwater. But, well, the button that you push for the doorbell isn't underwater.
Oh, right. Okay, the button that you push. I'm for 1, 2, 3, 4, 10 seconds there, I was thinking, okay, so wait a minute. How does a fish press a doorbell? I'm not getting this. So,
that's what I thought originally too. No, I think it is that other people can press the virtual doorbell to alert lock keepers of the presence of fish needing to go through the door.
So can it be seen like on a live stream YouTube kind of thing? And say, oh, look, there's some fish waiting at the door there. So here, I'm going to press this and the lock keeper will open the door.
Right now, even as we speak, thanks to the wonders of modern technology, if you log on to visdoorbell.nl, which, in case your Dutch is not as good as mine, is spelled visdeurbel Vishdurbel.nl, which stays the same no matter how you pronounce it. Vishdurbel.nl will show you a live stream of the inside of a river where there may or may not be fish. If you see fish, you press the virtual doorbell to alert the lock keeper that he should let the fish pass.
So, hold on. Like, and did the fish wait there knowing, God, I wish some human would press the damn bell, no?
Well, no, but the whole fish going up river thing is very interesting. Oh. Like, it is.
Fascinating.
It is. Because I don't know how they know how to do it. Do you know what else they do?
What?
They use lifts.
They use lifts. Okay.
There are fish lifts where fish will swim in and wait for the lift. And then people push a button and the lift goes up, carrying up to 100,000 fish
at a time.
Wait a second,
you're telling me that there's not just a doorbell in this wherever place you just mentioned earlier on, where they can open the door, human beings can get onto the guy in charge, or now you're telling me that they can take a lift upwards?
Well, not quite. I'm telling you, in this instance, there is a doorbell where a man will open a door for the fish to travel through. In other places, there are lifts which go up and down on a schedule, and the fish wait in the lift until the lift goes up and then they go through.
Is it an automatic thing? When you say on a schedule, you don't need a human being to press anything. It just happens every sort of half hour or whatever. Is that it?
As always, with your searing supplementary questions, you have found me out, Dave. I don't know. I took a leap of logic and decided that it had to be automated, but there may also be a man watching a webcam until the lift has sufficient fish quantity within before he hits the button.
Okay, fascinating stuff. All right, that's amazing. I never knew any of that now.
A Canadian politician has been seen naked in a work Zoom call.
Right, okay. That's kind of old stuff. That's happening every second week now. Something weird goes on, doesn't it? Like, remember your man who was the fish? Or he wasn't. He was a cat.
Oh, yeah. I had forgotten him.
A man was naked, was he?
A man was naked in a work Zoom call. He apologised. He represents the Quebec district of Pontiac. And he said in a statement on Wednesday, "This was an unfortunate error. My video was accidentally turned on as I was changing into my work clothes after going for a jog." He said that he was embarrassed by the incident and sincerely apologised to his colleagues in the House of Commons for this unintentional distraction.
Fantastic. So I think we should let him off and everything is good, right? Is that the point? Has there been any reprimanding going on, or just that's cool?
No, a member of Canada's Bloc Québécois party, Claude de Belfoy, said after the conference call that it might be necessary to remind the members, especially the male ones, that a tie and jacket are obligatory.
Okay, very good. Spiffing indeed. Yeah, but sure, everybody's on.
Have you got a webcam?
Is naked from the waist down. What? Have I got a webcam?
Run that past me again, Dave.
All the newsreaders in RT, they're naked from the waist down, except those standing outside the doll. Hold on a second now. Start that again. What did you say? Have I got a webcam?
Like, have you got a webcam?
Is there a camera on my computer? Is that what you mean?
That's what I mean, yes.
Well, yeah.
Using different words, same question.
Yes, there is, yeah.
Do you cover it or do you leave it constantly exposed?
I leave it constantly exposed.
Do you know that you shouldn't?
I'm sure I shouldn't. That's why you asked, obviously, knowing damn well that I probably did leave it exposed. So tell me, Dr. Savage, why should I not do that?
Because hackers, Dave,
might be
looking at you in your house.
I don't care.
Mark Zuckerberg puts duct tape over his webcam.
Does he? Right. Yep. On that note.
I get the sense you're telling me to leave now.
No,
I have more fish facts.
I'm just going to pull down this yoke. Oh God, I'm going to start that again. I'm just going to pull down
don't
the
pull
fader
down the
as we say here.
No,
on radio.
Not again. I haven't recovered from the last time. You'll never read the news.
Anton,
I told you.
See you next week, Anton.
Bye. Dave Fanning on 2FM. 2FM.